Loving what you're hearing? Make sure you're subscribed here on your favorite podcast app. Or there's even more waiting for you over on YouTube. On our channel, you'll get to see our fascinating guests demonstrate their techniques in real time. You'll see my animated explanation of complex health concepts made simple, plus all of those you had to be there moments that we mentioned in the show. The Coaching with Maddie episodes will be there too. We're also creating exclusive YouTube shorts, quick, powerful health tips you won't find anywhere else. And let's face it, if we're going to be doom scrolling, which we all do from time to time, you might as well make it worthwhile. Just search How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast on YouTube and hit subscribe to unlock the visual side of becoming a healthy friend of the show. Because sometimes you need to see it to believe it, and also to achieve it. The direct link is in the show notes below. Come and join our YouTube community. This is episode 429. Ozempic, the miracle weight loss drug that's taken over Hollywood and social media. Eat anything you want and still lose weight. Get skinny before a wedding in just 4 weeks, influencers have been saying. But what if I told you this so-called miracle comes with a $300 to $1,400 monthly price tag, which goes every month until, every month for the rest of your life. And it also has side effects that they've been doing a great job at keeping very quiet about. So in this episode, I'm going to tell you exactly what Ozempic does to your body, which isn't all good, why you might think twice about using it, and most importantly, why certain people don't want you to know about the natural alternatives that could give you the same result without destroying your bank account, your gut health, or shortening your life. In theory, and likely in practice, this information on today's episode could save you thousands of dollars and years of regret. So, let's get into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Welcome to today's episode talking about weight loss drugs. If you don't know me, a quick piece of my background. So I'm a scientist and nutritionist, and I've formerly worked in nutritional epigenetics labs. I was also a minion in a cancer research team for almost 7 years in a hospital, loosely involved with a number of clinical trials over that time. I've also worked in functional medicine clinics, and now I run this podcast and channel alongside my weight loss and binge eating programs, of which it's my mission to coach 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And by real, I mean more than just the body fat. And we do it without calorie counting, embarrassing weigh-ins, or a forbidden food list. If you want to work on what's really going on with your sugar, food, or carb addiction, or your cravings that just never seem to go away, so you can achieve real weight loss, the links to the work we do are down in the show notes or the caption below. So scroll down, click the link, and let's chat about whether we're the right people to help you on your health journey. Okay, so we're diving into this conversation around Ozempic and weight loss medication and drugs. And before I get started, remember, this is not medical advice. This is my analysis, my own interpretation. I've got all of the tabs open. I've been researching this for some time. I've had clients that have been on it, that are on it, that are considering going on it. And so there's a lot of anecdotal references that I'll probably make as well to people that I've spoken directly to. And so I put this information here for you so that you can add it to your pile of research to make better decisions about your health, short term and long term. All right, so let's get into it. Bit of background on Ozempic, just so we can bring ourselves up to date. So the name that you might have heard, either Ozempic is the really public one, or semaglutide, it was originally researched as part of diabetes type 2 treatment, right? And any reference that I make throughout this video or this podcast to diabetes is to type 2 diabetes. Okay. And so the way that they got here through that research in diabetes was discovering the GLP-1 hormone. The research on that began in the 1980s, and they first produced a drug that affected the GLP-1 receptor, was produced or approved rather in 2005. So these types of GLP-1 manipulators, let's call them, or modulators, they've been around for some time, and there's been a bit of research going into them. You know, we're looking at over 40 to 50 years research, you know, at this point in time. So there's a little bit behind them. So that's somewhat comforting to know. And they've been on the market since 2005 in different forms. However, Ozempic specifically was approved in 2017 for type 2 diabetes, was FDA approved in the US. And then 2021, it was approved for the next step of rollout, which is weight management under the brand name Wegovy. And then in 2023, it was approved as part of the way that you might respond to or manage cardiovascular risk reduction. And so just to give you an idea of what level of success this drug has had in that time. So if we look at a bit of some of the statistics online that you can find, the annual reports from some of these companies that sell this drug and produce these similar types of GLP-1 agonists. So specifically for Ozempic, we've got in 2022, global sales, so 1 year, $8.5 billion. In 2023, global sales hit $11.3 billion. And over the next several years, they're projected to go up and up and up. And remember, B, I'm saying B with billions with a B. And the crazy thing about those that number of profit, or rather that number of sales, is that of those numbers, approximately each year, approximately 65% of that came from the USA alone, which is wild to me that one country consumes so much of a drug. And actually, the USA consume a very large percentage of the entire world's pharmaceuticals, period, right? And they're consuming so much, not just the US, but the entire world, that there's currently a bit of a shortage due to the overwhelming demand everywhere because it's being touted as this fantastic, amazing weight loss drug. And, you know, everybody wants weight loss in this world of excessive food, excessive sugar, excessive vegetable oil, excessive access to extremely cheap and extremely low nutrient foods. Now, really cooked and messed up food system. Ironic that I use the word cooked, talking about food. But by 2030, the projection or the forecast for the market value of what to expect in 2030 for how much Ozempic is going to make or sell for, $71.5 billion globally. So that's a, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in 2030, but that's, you know, the numbers are going up. The numbers are going up. And as I said, this was originally created for type 2 diabetes. And the funny thing is that a side effect, and as you know, there are lots of side effects to lots of drugs. Some, there are much, much longer lists of side effects than the thing that it actually is meant to do for you. But the side effect of taking Ozempic was noticed in the research, which was weight loss. And during the trials that they did, they realized, oh, this is a side effect. And so as a result of that, people saw the opportunity, companies saw the opportunity, because a lot of people want weight loss, and medical weight loss is very appealing because it's very, very low barrier to entry. The barrier to entry is usually money, and that's it, rather than having to try hard, be different, change yourself, heal your emotions, you know, rewire your gut. You don't have to do any of that. How great, you know? So when you run a business and you see that opportunity, you think, amazing, we can market this for weight loss. And so a lot of people are now prescribing it for what's called off-label use, which is not its intended use, specifically for weight loss. Hence, it's been blowing up on social media, Hollywood, celebrities, you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry has got a story or an amazing, you know, before and after image to show, right? For the short period of time they've been on it, which is, you know, fantastic that people are getting benefit. And I just want to highlight that before I go any further, is that I do believe some drugs have some utility some of the time, right? In regards to, they're not all bad, is what I'm trying to say. And just like Ozempic has its place in the world. We'll get into more of my thoughts about what that place looks like, okay? And in regards to this, I guess, as I said, there's a shortage, a supply shortage for diabetics, who are the people that actually need it, because all of the people that want to get skinny fast are eating it up, basically. And there's a number of other, you know, products on the market. I mentioned before Wegovy, so that's just sort of a rebrand of the same drug with higher doses. Mounjaro, which is a tirzepatide, and the idea is that that's meant to be a better drug because it preserves your protein or your muscle mass a little bit more than some of the others do. There's Rybelsus, there's Saxenda. You know, there's a number of these types of drugs on the market, these weight loss drugs, and I'm going to talk a little bit about history of weight loss drugs as well. But just to get clear on what the GLP-1 agonist is exactly. So GLP-1, glucagon-like peptide. It's a natural hormone produced in your gut after you eat, which sends a signal to your brain about fullness and satiety. Now, the idea of using a drug to do this means that we are artificially manipulating your biology to produce more of that signal to go to your brain to tell you that you're full and you're satiated, meaning that you're not actually full, you're not actually satiated, which could be a real problem for health, and I'll get into that soon. It also helps regulate blood sugar. So now we're entering the space of all of the benefits of the type 2 diabetes. So fantastic, could be great. Naturally release GLP-1. So the body that we have, or the gut that we have that produces GLP-1, it breaks down really quickly. And we're talking like a matter of minutes, right? And so the idea is that Ozempic or semaglutide, it's manipulated and designed in a way that the GLP-1 breaks down over a week. So your sense of feeling full and satiated and not hungry, so fundamentally it's an appetite suppressant, you're feeling that way for up to a week after taking the injection, which is incredible because then naturally you eat less and this gets into the whole calorie deficit conversation. You end up in a calorie deficit, you inherently lose weight, right? It's the thermodynamic argument about weight loss, which is something that I also challenge a lot throughout this podcast, not this episode specifically, but other episodes that we've got. And we'll get into that too. There's a lot to get into today. But the idea is that, yeah, we feel full for much longer. Okay, rather than on a day-to-day basis, hunger comes back much quicker because our body's sending us real, true signals about the nutrition that we're putting in our body being inadequate or adequate or full or not full or, you know, whatever communication it's sending us. And of course, some people can have those pathways messed up. Often people that are obese, that have been eating high sugar diets for a long time, lots of soda, lots of soft drink, lots of sugar, lots of high fructose corn syrup, lots of vegetable oil. You know, if you've been damaging your gut, destroying the information transmission between your gut and your brain, that pathway can be really messed up in a way that affects leptin. So leptin's that full, another part of that full hormone cascade, like GLP-1. And so you can really mess up those processes as well as the place where those messages go in the brain. And that can actually be a conversation about sleep. So your inability to feel effectively full is may actually not be an issue of your gut or your hormone signaling at all. It's actually the receipt of those, you know, receiving those signals in the brain that could be at fault there. Anyway, I'm getting off path. Sleep can really help with that. So can clean food, diet, exercise, all those things. So this is the idea of the GLP-1, is it makes us feel fuller for longer. And so physically, the things that it does to our actual body is these are all things that happen to the body as you take this drug over a period of time. That the effects are different for everybody. There's a varying degree of how these things show up in your body. Some people experience lots of one. Some people experience a little bit of all of them. And what it does in your digestive system is it thickens the bowel wall, which means that it slows your stomach emptying. Okay, this is starting to make sense, right? Why would you feel fuller for longer? Well, the food stays in your stomach longer. So it's very practical in that sense. It's very, very logical, right? And so from there, it also reduces gut motility, of course, because if you're slowing stomach emptying, the speed at which the food moves through your gut processes and all the way, you know, from gums to bum, all the way out the back door, that slows down, you know. And we often hear arguments from, you know, the vegetarian or vegan community talking about food rotting in your gut or meat rotting in your gut. Now, whilst that is incorrect, this does introduce the idea when we reduce gut motility, and food ends up in fermentation in our body for longer, what are the consequences of that? You know, it's a conversation that we'll get into later, but this is what's happening from taking this drug. So it slows your stomach emptying, it reduces your gut motility, and as a result of thicker gut lining, it delays nutrient absorption. And as a result of that, because the nutrients have got further to go, but as a result of making this wall thicker, it can even reduce nutrient absorption. Because it's not able to get across the barrier, the gut barrier, effectively enough, and you've got this artificial, you know, thickening of the wall, which, you know, delays the absorption. You know, and in theory, you could argue that it increases the absorption of nutrition because things are sitting there longer, which is actually one thing that happens to pregnant women when they get constipated during pregnancy. Often, the idea is that the body's trying to extract all of the possible nutrition that it can, so it's slowing it down. The difference is for pregnant women, they're not taking a drug that thickens their gut lining, okay? Now, number two on my little list of benefits or how, you know, what it helps is the brain effects. So as we said, it mimics the natural satiety signals. So as long as you're able to receive those satiety signals in your brain, which many people aren't, then it's going to have, you know, send those signals to your brain. You'll be, you know, full quicker, longer, all that kind of stuff. Your appetite will be reduced. It'll also affect the reward centers in your brain. So if we think about reward centers, we're talking about dopamine and pleasure hormones, and there's a cocktail of hormones there, but dopamine's the most widespread and communicated about hormone when it comes to pleasure and happiness and satisfaction and sugar consumption and all of that kind of jazz. It affects the reward centers and in a way that it sort of mediates them a little bit. You know, it takes less food to feel as excited. So That's a good thing. That's literally the opposite of an addiction, right? The addiction is like your tolerance gets higher and higher, so you need more and more and more. Whereas this is actually slowly winding things back. As to how far it winds things back and as to, you know, when that winding back actually ceases, I don't know. But it does have an effect on those reward centers. And as a result of all of the things I've just said, may reduce food cravings. Number three is pancreatic effects. So your pancreas is it's the organ in your body that's a major problem for those people with diabetes, right? There's stuff going on there in the beta cells. They're not releasing insulin correctly. And so the pancreatic effects that Ozempic or semaglutide can give you is that it increases insulin production when needed, which is great. You only want insulin to be produced when you need it. And it also reduces glucagon secretion. So glucagon is your stored sugar that lives in the liver. And so the idea of reducing your glucagon secretion means that there's going to be less blood sugar to manage, or less sugar in the blood to manage. So you're going to have this more harmonious relationship between your pancreas, your insulin, your blood sugar, and your diet. However, we've got to remember, whilst that sounds amazing, we are artificially manipulating this with a medication, when actually the inputs of this problem are external to the body, in the sense that they are behavioral, they are lifestyle, they are food choices, they are sleep patterns, they are all of those things. But all of this in within the body, whilst taking the drug, helps improve blood sugar, helps improve your glycemic control. And those are good things. Those are good things. And diabetics sometimes need help with that stuff, right? And looking at the studies that I've looked at and some of the clinical trials that were used to make a decision about this drug being used as a weight loss, you know, tool, is that the average weight loss was 15 to 17% of body weight. So that's pretty cool. Weight loss. Again, everybody wants weight loss, you know? And so we've got a world that's sick, fat, sick, and dying, right? And so we're in this space where weight loss is a good thing, because weight loss is a precursor to lots of diseases. In fact, most of the diseases of civilization that we have manufactured as a consequence of the horrible food environment that we currently exist in, and the sedentary lifestyles and the toxic medications that we've been pumped with for many years, mean that we're in these situations where obesity really enhances our likelihood of these diseases that kill us and shorten our lives, right? So weight loss is a good thing. And of the studies that I looked at, there was a variation in regards to how long these studies looked at, but 68-week studies was the longest one that I looked at, and most of the weight loss occurred in the first 6 months, which would suggest that those that go beyond the 6 months, like every weight loss strategy, because this is a natural biological mechanism, experience some degree of plateau. And if you don't change the strategy, then that plateau will just lock down, double down, lock in, and you'll be stuck in that plateau for a long time, you know? And then go off the drug, you gain all the weight back, right? So now the negative side of things, even though I've kind of touched on that, I'm going to punch through a list of negative side effects here. So this is as listed by the companies that sell these drugs, which is common side effects, which if you look at the data, is quite a significant amount of the people that take these drugs experience these. And I can say that having worked with a lot of people one-on-one and in group settings that have been on these drugs, that are currently taking these drugs, that have reported many of these side effects, which I'm about to tell you. So let's go through the list. So nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, constipation, like more advanced gut issues, such as issues digesting food. And you become aware of that when you look in the toilet and realize that, hey, I didn't really digest the food. You can develop food intolerances that you didn't have before, right? So there's a lot of gut stuff that's possibly going on there. Remember, we are manipulating the lining of the gut and therefore, you know, what goes on in that environment and within that microbiome. You get headaches, fatigue, dizziness, indigestion or dyspepsia, right? Hypoglycemia. So remember, originally Ozempic was created for diabetics, right? And so the idea is that if you're diabetic, you've got high blood sugar that you want to bring to normal. Now, if we're giving Ozempic, a diabetic medication that influences blood sugar, to a cohort of people, which is in the many millions now, that just want weight loss, that don't have diabetes, remember, it's going to affect your blood sugar. So if you've got normal blood sugar and then you take this drug, there's a possibility, just as I've said, that hypoglycemia, so low blood sugar, occurs. So it pushes you below that, because if it improves glycemic control and enhances your insulin sensitivity, and your blood sugar management, then you can be pushed below the normal range for your for a healthy insulin and sort of blood sugar reading, right? So that's a possible outcome. So that, you know, I just wanted to explain that because it makes sense. I think it's easy to make sense of. There's also issues with gastroenteritis that are possible, GERD, or otherwise known as reflux. Loss of muscle. Appetite suppression results in muscle and fat loss. This is concerning to me because when you're selling a weight loss drug, everybody just talks about the weight. Nobody talks about the body composition. Losing lean body mass, your muscle, is not a good thing for health. Not a good thing at all. If you jump on the scales and you're celebrating numbers that are actually made up of 50% muscle loss, that is a really bad thing. But they don't report on that, right? And the reason when that you lose muscle, one of the reasons you lose muscle with appetite suppression is you're not hungry, but your body actually requires protein in order to maintain the muscle. So you're not hungry to eat the protein, so you don't eat the protein, so your body eats the protein from your own muscles. That's what's going on there, right? You can also end up with an Ozempic face. So that's kind of the like the hollowed out look that you can get sometimes. It's kind of a ghastly look where your cheeks sort of go in like with into your face in a way where your cheekbones are pronounced, your jawbones are pronounced. And look, some people, some women might find this really skinny, ghastly look appealing. Some women have it naturally and that's okay. But there's a particular Ozempic face that happens with this sort of gaunt look that's going on, this skeletal type look. And if you've got that naturally, I'm not talking to you and I apologize if you're offended. But the point is that it has this impact and many skinny, you know, malnutritioned celebrities and influencers out there have this because they don't have enough food in their diet. They don't have enough calories going into their body, but this can happen by taking Ozempic. Now, there's some more serious risks which show up as well. Thyroid tumors, right? So most overweight people have some kind of metabolic strain going on, which can be related to their thyroid because your thyroid is a contributor to a significant portion of your metabolic rate. And so it's normal to already have a thyroid that's under pressure and under tension when you're overweight. But taking Ozempic, a serious risk includes thyroid tumors, right? So you're putting pressure, your thyroid in danger in an environment where it's already under additional pressure that isn't natural as a result of the composition of your body, right? So that's concerning to me, especially with a background in cancer and understanding a little bit about how that stuff works. Another thing is pancreatitis. Remember, your pancreas is the where your insulin is secreted and released. And so it's important for type 2 diabetics. Again, if you're a type 2 diabetic and your pancreas is already under strain as a result of your body composition, and then we add in Ozempic, which also has a risk of creating serious problems to your pancreas, it feels like, you know, we're trying to fight fire with fire a little bit there. Do you want to know how to lose weight without counting calories or needing to use restrictive diets? Turns out the answer is on Instagram. You might be interested to know that over 70% of our paying clients begin their journey with a weight loss goal. Most of them achieve this goal without fad diets and without calorie counting. And in the process, they also rewire their brains to stop craving sugar and they stop their secret binge eating sessions without the need to use loads of willpower. Why does what we do work? Because the fat that you want to lose, it isn't just about the calories you're consuming. It's actually wild how differently we do things. We work on your mind and your body gets better. And I think more people need to know about how we can do this for you too, which is exactly why I'm back on Instagram as The Real Weight Loss Coach. If you want to know how to really drop the weight that's been holding you down, how to keep it off, and to stay healthy long into the future, then follow me on Instagram. The link to my profile is in the show notes below, or you can search for me on Instagram by typing in The Real Weight Loss Coach. Give me a follow and I'll chat to you in the comments and the DMs over there. You can also get kidney problems, gallbladder issues, bowel obstruction, which means you need surgery to go in there and get your poop out. That's delicious, right? One of the obvious ones to me as a practitioner in this space is weight rebound when stopping. It's just like diets. You stop the diet, the weight comes back on, you know, because we go back to who we used to be, the behaviors, the addictions, the cravings. And in the situation of Ozempic and weight loss or appetite suppressant drugs, what happens is your body comes back to normal and it turns back on. And guess what? All of a sudden you're like, I have been malnutritioned for months, if not years. And you go into this massive overfeeding frenzy, which goes for sometimes months, because you have deprived your body often of protein and often of nutrition that it needs. And especially with this message that's out there with some of these drugs that you can eat whatever you want and still lose weight, or use this drug to allow yourself to eat whatever you want. And even some people say that about going to the gym. I go to the gym so I can eat whatever I want, right? Is that if you've been following any of those ideas, the second that your body gets that message clear again and knows what's going on, you will be hungry for protein, probably hungry for carbohydrates too. Carbohydrate cravings are always present for people that have got these challenges, because it's the fastest way to get nutrition and energy into the body due to the way that we digest and metabolize it. But that weight rebound is coming if you're on this stuff and you don't sort out all of the other areas of your life before you come off it, right? And again, not looking at the body composition factor drives me wild. And it reminds me of a podcast that I did called Debunking the Netflix Vegan Doco, You Are What You Eat. So it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the audio version, episode 327, this conversation which a lot of health documentaries and health movements and health advocates talk about with weight loss, is they fail to acknowledge when weight loss includes a significant and concerning amount of weight loss that is in fact protein, lean muscle mass. That's not a good thing to lose. You do not want to lose that, right? You want to lose body fat. So I think that's worth flagging with everybody listening, okay? And after talking about all of these problems that people experience from these drugs, I just do want to do a quick history lesson on drugs that were released previously that were regarded as breakthrough miracle weight loss drugs at the time, right? So you might have been alive long enough to remember some of these. They've all been in my lifetime. So Fen-Phen, released in 1992, was then pulled off the market in 1997. And the reason for that was that it caused heart valve problems and pulmonary hypertension. There was Redux. Do you remember Redux? Released in 1996. Rapidly pulled off the market in 1997 for producing the same sort of heart valve issues as Fen-Phen. So I remember that because I saw it on the news. I think it might have been a show called A Current Affair, which I think is still on in Australia at the time, but it was so rapidly pulled off the market. So I have a memory of that. In 1997, they had the release of Meridia. That was pulled off the market in 2010. Right? And the reason for that is that it increased the risk of heart attack and stroke. Also, Acomplia was released in 2006 and very rapidly pulled off the market in 2008. It was actually never approved for use in the US, but the reason that this was pulled off the market for the rest of the world and Europe is that there were severe psychiatric side effects, including suicidal thoughts. Oh, that sounds great. I'd love that with a bit of weight loss, right? There was also Belvic, released in 2012, pulled off the market in 2020. Reason, increased cancer risk. Contrave, is that how you say it? Contrave? Contrave? Contrave. Released 2014. It's still available today, but comes with a black box warning for concerns around suicidal thoughts and ideations and neuropsychiatric events. Also, amazing. Who's taking that risk? Not me. Not me. And then, of course, now we've got Wegovy, Ozempic, Mounjaro. And Mounjaro is meant to be better. It's meant to be better than Ozempic because it is meant to preserve some of that lean body mass, the protein in your body, a little better. And so I would say amazing if it does that. But also, every drug that comes out is celebrated as way better and way more amazing than its predecessor, right? So, you know, a healthy dose of salt and skepticism comes with that kind of marketing. And I mentioned this history of weight loss drugs because this pattern shows to me how many breakthrough weight loss drugs were later found to have serious safety issues, very serious, and consequences for the people that were on them that now had to stop taking them and live with the consequences of that situation. And at the time, each of these was initially promoted as revolutionary before the problems emerged. And, you know, it reminds me of Dr. Mark Hyman made this joke on something that I was watching. Make sure you take new drugs as soon as possible so you can avoid the side effects. Which begs the question, how long will it be until Ozempic is pulled off the market due to the many side effects that people experience? Maybe it won't be. Maybe there's a disproportionate amount of people that are doing, you know, having really poor results and 95% of people are having the best time of their life. You know, the data is out on that one at the moment. Well, hopefully it comes in and we figure out what to do and help people in a better way. which is why I run the programs that I run to try and help people in a better way without drugs, right? And one thing that I, you know, am hypothesizing or throwing around as an idea is that maybe part of the pharmaceutical strategy as a business, as a company, and we all want to earn money and run businesses, but maybe they know they're very smart business people. Maybe they know the drug will only have a lifetime of 5 years or 10 years on the market, but they go gangbusters for 5 years or 10 years and take home $100 or $500 billion. And then when that drug is eventually pulled off the market, it's still regarded as the most successful 5 or 10 years that they've ever had, you know, as a business, as an organization. So maybe that's part of the plan. I don't know. I don't mean to sound conspiratorial, but, you know, just looking upon the history, it's worth acknowledging that there's a possibility of business intent and earning money being a motivation for going about things in a certain way, right? Speaking of finances and going about things in a certain way, I want to get down to the individual, you and me, the people that sit in front of the doctor and ask the questions and pay the money, right? Now, depending on the country you're in and the healthcare system you're in, and depending on whether you've got insurance or health benefits or PBS coverage, the average monthly cost in Australia is about $6 to $160 per month, right? So it's easy to understand why Australians aren't willing to do the real work of improving their relationship with food, getting control of their sugar addiction and fixing their diet and improving their microbiome and moving their body and not being sedentary, which is the work we do with people. It's easy to see why Australians can't be bothered with that, because our healthcare system has such a good arrangement with financially with governments and PBS and all of the systems that it's only $6 to $160 per month, which is a lot for some people, but very, very manageable for a lot of people. However, if you don't have any of the benefits or your benefits are limited with the setup that you've got in the USA, it can be between $900 to $1,400 USD per month to be on this drug. And you've got to be on it for life. There's no coming off plan, right? At least that's not what they're pitching to us at the moment. It's a lifelong drug, and the amount of clients that I've spoken to that have either inquired about it or been on it in the past, their practitioner or doctor told them, you've got to be on this drug for life, right? And so if you're paying out of pocket, you know, several hundred dollars per month, all the way up to $900 to $1,400 USD per month, the lifetime cost of that is somewhere between, you know, let's say you're on it the cheapest level for 30 years, it's like $100,000 US. And if you're on more expensive volumes or amounts or products, you know, we're looking at upwards of a lifetime cost of like $500,000, $500,000. And I'm totally extrapolating this to, you know, the worst case scenario. But if you look at the health of the average Australian or the average American or the average person in the Western world, the worst case scenario doesn't look that far away for a lot of people, right? Plus, you need to factor in additional medical costs, right? You don't just take one drug and then it fixes all of your problems. You've also got blood sugar monitoring and management devices. Maybe you've got a CGM. They've got a monthly cost as well. Maybe you've got to buy every month all of the strips to test your blood sugar. You know, the cost of not changing your behavior is that you'll also have other gut issues. You might have cancers show up. You might have other diseases. You know, the consequences of living a sedentary lifestyle. Ozempic doesn't solve those for you, does it, right? You need to actually go to the gym. You need to actually, you don't even need to go to the gym. You can do a lot with free YouTube videos and your floor at home or walking around the block. Ozempic isn't going to stop the toxic foods going in your mouth or the heavy metals or the brain deteriorating foods. The list goes on. You get the point, right? All of this stuff involves additional costs. And most of the people that are looking at this kind of stuff are usually on a small to a large handful of medications. So there are lots of other costs that go into being unwell, obese, or not doing what you need to do to truly heal and fix your body long term. Instead of doing that repetitive stuff, visiting the doctor, paying for all the drugs all of the time, I believe it's better, and it's my opinion personally, that it's better to commit to changing and leveling up and upgrading your relationship with food, your life, your health, your behavior, your psychology, to be a better person so that you can be proud and make health easy. Because it's not until then that the drugs will be more appealing, because they're more appealing when people don't want to do the work and don't want to be better and don't want to be more amazing. They're just like, what's the easiest, fastest way to get the best result? And, you know, as you can probably tell, I don't believe this is the best result. So, you know, how many times do you need to go around the yo-yo diet loop before you realize the system isn't working for you, or the system that you've created for yourself isn't working? I mean, it is working for Big Pharma, because 70% of Americans are overweight. It's pretty similar in Australia and a lot of the Western world. And so when you've got that many people overweight, I mean, that's a huge market share that you're able to sell to. And, you know, when you've got a recurring revenue model of people that have to be on this forever, and you've got hundreds and millions or hundreds of millions of people globally that need this, it's like, it's a genius business model. And I mean, one argument could be, if obesity is the number one precursor to our modern diseases, that if you solve obesity, maybe all the other diseases will disappear. Well, maybe, but if you're not changing all of the other things that I just mentioned, diet, lifestyle, toxins, heavy metals, relationship with food, psychology, blah, 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 long list rolls out like a, you know, 10-year-old's Christmas list when he goes to see Santa, then unfortunately other diseases aren't going to be solved very well. But I can understand that that might be an angle that is used. It's like, but if we solve the obesity thing with Ozempic, then all of the other diseases go away. That's obviously one naive strategic marketing angle to look at things. And then you pile on celebrity endorsements, social media influence, you know, medical professionals that back it, and direct-to-consumer advertising in the USA particularly. It's a very profitable industry, obviously. But I guess more importantly, in regards to the long-term consequences for you as the individual, is that weight gain once you stop, you know, so many people, two-thirds of the weight returns after you come off. For some people, it all comes back. For some people, even more comes back. And the clients I've worked with found that when they came off it, and they came off it due to the experiencing a lot of the side effects I've mentioned, they gained more weight than they had initially. And I would put this down to the refeeding, a thing called refeeding syndrome, which is that they were malnourished for the period of time that they were on that, and their body has sent them into, we need to stock up, we need to store, right? There's also, as the studies have shown, there's diminishing effects over time. So maybe it is useful for a short period of time. Maybe you do need to use it for a short period of time to just get things moving again, get your stagnant or plateaued metabolism or body, you know, kicked into gear. But it has to be a short period of time followed up by all of the actual things that create lasting health change without medication, right? The other thing is psychological dependency. This concerns me. Because when you have a belief or an idea that all of your answers are in a pill, or that this is going to save you, that's a really unsafe place to be. Because psychologically, it's like the second that something doesn't go right or goes wrong, or you don't have access to that drug, and we're seeing a shortage at the moment, you can be totally destabilized psychologically, because you've mentally invested all of your hope and dreams into this particular pill or injection, right? And so whenever there's a psychological dependence on anything, whether it's a human being, a partner, a drug, a food, you know, you're not in optimal health if you've got a psychological dependency on something. And obviously this excuses people that have actual psychiatric illnesses. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the rest of us, which is the vast majority of people watching. And again, I'm going to mention it again. Muscle loss is a major concern to me personally in regards to people that use these drugs and lose weight. It obviously doesn't address the root cause of the problem, which could be your emotional eating, your binge eating, your overeating cycles that happen day in and day out, the sugar that's in there day in and day out. There's no behavioral change support that happens as part of, you know, what people do here. They fail to teach you proper nutrition. And I don't mean food pyramid, you know, optimal plate living, whatever they call it these days. It changes all the time, so they can try and escape the bad branding that people like me are putting out there for that kind of movement. They don't teach you proper nutrition, real human nutrition. Human ancestral nutrition is different to what they're advertising and teaching doctors and dietitians these days. And obviously, this doesn't build a sustainable habit. Although you could argue that it builds a sustainable habit of giving yourself an injection regularly. That's a habit that you have to be in. But it also highlights that when you're attached to the idea that there's a positive outcome, a lot of people don't forget to take their injection, because this is the miracle weight loss drug, right? So, sustainable habits are maybe easier to build than we first thought. It's just that you have to believe that the outcome will be produced. And I personally am frustrated by the quick fix mentality that is constantly perpetuated in the diet and nutrition industry, the industry that I work in as a professional, because It sets people up for failure over and over and over again. And I don't like the normalization of medication dependency either, because I've got, you know, lots of opinions and ideas about the detriments. And I've listed on this episode huge list of side effects, which the companies that sell these things put on the box. You know, they'll tell you if you go to the website. So, you know, if we can get off medication dependency and we can move away from that kind of life, I think it's very good. You know, and also, I guess, focusing on lifestyle change, which I know isn't sexy. I know it's not sexy. And it takes a bit. It takes a lot of intention and, you know, positive desire for yourself to want to be better. And you have to actually make space in your life, you know, to get sustainable, real weight loss, which isn't just fat loss. It's also to get sustainable weight loss, which isn't just fat loss. And when I say that, I don't mean losing muscle. I don't mean losing anything like that. I mean losing your awful belief systems about yourself that drive you to eat, the losing the stress so that you don't stress eat, losing the stories that lead you to overeat, binge eat, or emotionally eat on a regular basis. That's the weight we need to cut away, the psychological weight that is weighing you down. That means you punish yourself with food, right? We want you to get proper nutrition in, because that gut-brain connection, those two things communicate all day, all night. And if we're not putting in the right information, along with having good ideas in our head, so when I say right information, I mean the right information in our head, psychologically and mentally, and the right information in our gut microbiome, which we put in with food and beverage. If we're not putting that in, we're not able to, and I see it as a seesaw. On one side is your physical health and nutrition. On the other side is your psychological health, right? And these two things are interrelated, because if you just do the physical health, then the second that you have any kind of stress or emotional reaction or trigger or trauma or situation occur, then that's going to drive you back into the emotional binge, overeating, sugar eating, fast food eating patterns. And if you only do the psychological work and you don't do the gut work, then your gut might drive you to eat, because you haven't actually, you know, worked on reprogramming your gut and putting the right nutrition in. So you need to do both of these things at the same time. And medication is not doing both of those things at the same time. And it's likely, if you're still watching this or listening to this, that you are someone that has yo-yo dieted and tried just focusing on one bit of it for a very long time, repeatedly over and over and over again. And you got results, and then you ended up back where you started, maybe plus some, right? Which is exactly why we work on the mindset and psychology side of what we do, which is called the Mind Body Nourishment Program. And we've got over 100 testimonials. We've worked with over 350 people, mostly women. We've worked with a few teenagers. We've worked with a few men. But yeah, women above the age of 40 is sort of our sweet spot. Again, hundreds of testimonials. We've been very intentional about the type of people we work with. We've got a very holistic approach, a very natural approach. Again, we're looking at long-term results and real weight loss, burning the fat, getting rid of the psychological bullshit that's in your head, that's weighing you down, all of the crap in your life that's weighing you down and driving you to eat. Right. And guess what? There's no side effects. The side effects are confidence and a good time. Although, you know, one of the side effects, I guess, could be that some people are sad about having some foods less than they used to. But we do things slowly and progressively so that you can be comfortable and healthy in a year, in 2 years, in 5 years. We're not bullshitting you with this 28-day stuff, or, you know, in just 3 months, we're going to change your entire life, or any of that kind of stuff. We're giving you a real talk so you can get off the diet roller coaster. You can get off all of that stuff so you can actually invest one time and make a permanent change, rather than constantly investing financially with your time, your energy, your effort, as your body continues to deteriorate over the years, by doing all of these short-term drugs and solutions and challenges that aren't sustainable, aren't long-term, and require you to restrict and deprive yourself of the things that you really want, which is why we've figured out a way. In our program, in Mind Body Nourishment Program, we've figured out a way to do it without calorie counting, without a forbidden or a naughty food list, and without embarrassing weigh-ins or any of that kind of stuff. And you might be like, Matty, you're just another person that's selling me the pie in the sky. I'm not, because it's not sexy to tell people it's going to take a bit of time. It's not exciting to people to tell them, yeah, it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable. We're going to confront some challenges and some demons, and there might be some tears. But this is the real work that leads to real weight loss. And real weight loss means it stays off, right? It's lasting. So if that in any way sounds interesting to you, the link to be involved in the work that we do is down in the show notes below, down in the caption below. You can click the link. You can book in a time to chat with me or my team to figure out whether we're a good fit to help you on your real weight loss journey. And again, Ozempic and medication and drugs, they have their place. And they might be a really good thing that you need to kickstart something that's going on right now. But if it is not supported by lifestyle, health, nutrition, life transformation on every angle, psychological, physical, mental, energetic, spiritual, then you're going to go back to the problems you had before, or you're going to be on this expensive, costly medication bandwagon for a lifetime without fixing any of the other things. And fixing the other things are really important. Plus, I don't want you to lose muscle. I even saw one person talk about when they were on Ozempic, they had a nutritionist, they were eating plenty of protein, they were going to the gym to increase their protein demands, and they still lost muscle, right? And that's one story. It might not be your story. Remember that quick fixes, they come often with hidden costs and for a short period of time until you go back. If there's deprivation, restriction, biological manipulation for too long, there's going to be consequences. It's just how the human body works because it's trying to protect you. It's trying to save you. It's trying to feed you. A big part of this whole story, which we haven't touched on, is the food environment that our governments have allowed to evolve and happen with all of these, you know, multinational conglomerates that spend trillions on feeding the world. That system needs to change, right? So I firmly believe that system needs to change because it is one that manipulates our behavior, you know, manipulates our spending activity to go towards high calorie, low nutrition foods, which do not fuel health in any particular way. Okay. So again, maybe Ozempic is useful for you. I think it's got its place, but I think not using it and avoiding all of the consequences that come with it, all of the side effects that come with it, I think that's a better choice, you know? And if any of my clients were to ask me, I would do everything I could to be able to advise them that there's a better way. It's the Mind Body Nourishment Program. That's the way we do it. I think it's the most holistic and well-rounded version of things that I've ever seen. That's what I wanted to create after I went on my own emotional eating, sugar addiction journey personally and fixed those issues for myself. So this is my wrap up on Ozempic. So if any of this resonates with you or you've learned something a little bit or a lot, I'd love to hear from you down in the comments below. If you've tried Ozempic or if you're thinking about it, I'd love to hear from you down below as well. I think an important part of health and wellness progress and evolution is that we have open conversations with real people about their real experiences. Because it's one thing for a financially incentivized company to put out a particular study or fund a particular study. It's another thing for us as a collective, for 1, 2, 10,000, 100,000 of us to actually talk and represent ourselves and our own voice in the comments down below or in public platforms where we can tell the truth, you know? And hopefully we're not censored for that, right? So into the comments below, I'd love to see you. I will reply to everybody. Thanks for being here. Share this with a friend or a family member that needs to hear it. And I'll chat to you on the next episode. Bye for now. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.